Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. Right now on this day, back in 1936, the late Mamwini Mandela was born on this day. In 1950, a company by the name of Sasol would be registered today. This was following a white paper that was drafted for Parliament in 1927. Very interesting that on the birthday of Sasol, the share price performed the way it did today. We'll get into that in a second, though. In 1960, on this day, Fidel Castro would deliver a four-hour-long speech at the United Nations, to be exact. It was 4 hours and 29 minutes. I wonder what he had to say. In 1969, on this day, the Brady Bunch would premiere on ABC. In 1982, probably the most iconic television series involving a vehicle and an individual, Knight Rider, would debut on NBC. I miss that show. 1984, on this day, Britain would sign an agreement with China in which it would agree to return Hong Kong to China in 1997. What a weird, weird agreement. On the same day, on the other side of the world, in the US, Ronald Reagan would veto the Comprehensive Apartheid Act that would aim to disadvantage South Africans even further. Interestingly enough, that veto of his would be overturned by the U.S. Congress 3 days later in a vote. In 1993, on this day, Alain Prost would win his fourth F1 title and also announce that he'd be retiring at the end of that season. In 2004, on this day, Nelson Mandela would be voted the greatest South African ever. In 2017, on this day, Saudi Arabia would overturn a ban on women driving cars, or women driving in general, and that would be... They would be the last country in the world to do so, to have had that ban in place. In 2022, on this day, just 2 years ago, Vladimir Putin would grant Edward Snowden citizenship in Russia. And a year later, in 2023, Donald Trump would be found guilty of fraud. 2024, he's running for president. You're tuned into the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we chat to Old Mutual about their interim results for the first half of the year, end of June 2024. We speak to Kokkie Kooyman of Denker Capital around HSBC's decision to exit South Africa after 29 years of having operated here. We speak to Regent Business School around why you should register to join Regent in 2025. And then, because it's Thursday, we've got an SME of the Week feature on a Thursday. We take a look at a unique company that is called Entity Empire, that's found a very unique way of dealing with waste. They've found an innovative way to convert waste into biodiverse products, and we're going to speak to the founder of that business, Neo Lelaka, around that.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Wouldn't be much of a market update show if we didn't give you an update on the markets. So we're going to do that. I'm joined on the line by the manager for trading services at Trive, Sean Dendere, to take a look at the market movements throughout the day, try and make sense of what's been happening, and see where we go. Good evening, Sean. Lovely to speak to you. Lovely to have you on the show. Markets having a good day today. I saw Asian markets kind of trading in the green, huge numbers out of Hong Kong and the China Composite Index, equally big numbers out of the CAC 40 in France, which was quite a surprise. But industrials in South Africa also coming to the party.
Thank you for having me, Jimmy. Always nice having you on the show, or having me on the show. So the markets have really been performing quite well in the past let's call it week, since we got those interest rate cuts last week from the US and then also South Africa. So it's been a knock-on effect from that perspective. And the momentum is really based on more positive data coming in from different regions. I mean, from the Asian markets, we look at the stimulus package that China announced yesterday. From the US perspective, we're looking at we're getting trickles of, you know, earnings reports from tech companies, which is also driving the markets in a positive direction. And industrials in South Africa, I think we did have a great PPI print today. The print for August was around 4.8%, and we're just under the 2.8%, which I think is really boding well for, you know, our top 40 and Aussie and the industrial shares on that front.
Speaking of the top 40 and Aussie, we made record highs today on both fronts, and it looks as though we're heading towards very big psychological levels. In the case of the top 40, I think it's 80,000 points, and in the case of the Aussie, it's 90,000 points. I want to get your thoughts around that. Do you think we'll breach those levels before the end of the year? I mean, it looks all but certain at this point.
You know, Jimmy, in my opinion, as it stands with all the data that's coming through, there is a possibility that we'll reach, you know, those numbers. But we shouldn't forget that it is also an election year in the United States. So November is also a very big month in terms of what happens with the markets. As much as, you know, the U.S. is an independent entity, the rest of the world kind of follows, or the U.S. has a domino effect on the rest of the global markets. So from that perspective, let's ride the wave. But in terms of the end of the year, we just got to have to take a wait and see approach.
You mentioned that U.S. election, and I want to get your thoughts on that, Sean. Do you think that there will be anything that will materially move the markets? I mean, at this point, we kind of know who the two candidates are. We kind of know from a Republican and a Democrat point of view who's running in which camp. Do you think that any outcome could spook the markets? We've seen Donald Trump as president before. Is the market concerned about any particular outcome at this point?
I think there's definitely concern because if we're looking at the Democrats versus the Republicans, they've got contrasting policy views. So based on that, you know, if we look at the Democrats now, if they were to carry on, Kamala wins the elections, there might be policy continuation, which I believe won't really affect the markets drastically. But if Donald Trump were to come back into power, we know that his policies are quite drastic. And from that perspective, we might see, you know, a bit of jitters in the market.
So the market does have quite a bit of reason to potentially be worried. Let's move to some other European data that's come out today. We got interest rate decisions from Switzerland. As you said, we saw interest rate decisions from the US, from South Africa. Switzerland's now cut their rates as well by 25 basis points. Did we expect that decision, and are we kind of reading anything more into it than just everybody seems to be getting on the rate-cutting bandwagon?
Yeah, I think it's more of a bandwagon scenario, in my opinion. The rest of the world is moving in that direction. We've fought inflation to a certain point. Most nations are getting into their target zones. So I think we were primed to start, you know, getting rate cuts in this towards the end of this year. And potentially we'll probably be getting more as the year or early next year goes on.
Sean, how do countries and central banks in particular balance that going into next year? I mean, there might be very small concerns at this point that we'll still see a US-led recession, but how do they balance the cutting cycle with not having their economies slow down to the point where they stagnate?
You know, you mentioned the US. I think the US is an interesting example in this case, because if we look at the US this year and this quarter last year as well, as much as they were in a rate hiking cycle, the US economy still seemed to be very robust. And we were seeing strong job numbers, strong wage growth, etc. So from that perspective, I don't necessarily see a potential recession, but I guess that's just my opinion, coming out of the US based on, you know, us lowering or them lowering interest rates. We'll probably see a little bit more momentum in the market because I think we've found the balance as we stand.
Well, hopefully that balance does continue, because if it doesn't, then we could be in for another rough time, and we've had a rough 4 years. I think we're all tired of it. Sean, I want to look at some local developments. There were obviously some really big winners and losers on the day. My surprise was Sasol. They obviously were down north of 5% today. I didn't see any SENS announcements. I know you didn't see any SENS announcements. And Sasol, interestingly enough, was registered on this day many, many years ago in 1950. So what happened there?
You know, with Sasol, I think, you know, the strong link to the oil price, we are definitely seeing a depressed oil price currently. And in addition to that, we still got the, you know, the geopolitical risks coming out of the Middle East, Palestine, Israel, etc. And the demand from China and the US has also been low from an oil perspective. So I think that the actual commodity oil itself is what's technically affecting the share price of Sasol, regardless of it having any news or any significant event occurring during the course of the day.
That's a bummer of a day for them. Let's look at some of the guys that had a good day. We see the likes of Naspers Process. Obviously, we're not surprised by that given how Tencent would have performed in Asia's session. But I am seeing that the likes of Transaction Capital also had a really good day. Richemont had a good day as well. Glencore, City Lodge, Capital Appreciation. Anything that stand out to you?
Not necessarily. I'm not too surprised. Based just referring back to the point I made about, the PPI coming in significantly lower this month. I don't know if that's a signal for the Reserve Bank that we might be getting, more aggressive cuts when they hold their next meeting. So everyone is currently in a positive, let's call it a positive vibe, positive element when it comes to the stock market and the markets in general.
That positive vibe, are you feeling it? What are you looking at the moment, and saying these might be really good stocks or really good sectors to get into, as we start to potentially head into a new bull run?
All right, so personally, the sector I'd be looking at will be construction, weirdly enough. I think there has been quite a nice turnaround in construction. We're looking at companies like Robex, RBX ticker. They're performing quite well. And I mean, when the GNU was formed, the president did mention that, they would like to see our skyline full of skyscrapers. So from that perspective, that is a sector that I'm looking at closely because I do think there's a lot of potential there going forward.
That's a very interesting one to look at because the construction space has been on the receiving end of some negativity. I'm looking through some of the performances. WBHO is up about 1% on the day. I'm trying to see how Raubex performed for the day. But nonetheless, the construction space, unlike the mining space, hasn't been as battered and as bruised for as long. Raubex is up about 3.5% on the day as we look at that. Why would you think that the construction space would stand to benefit at this point if we're seeing a lot of the focus still kind of moving to or still sitting with the Chinese demand conversation? Are you thinking that from a local perspective, we might get some infrastructure development from the government?
Yeah, there's potential infrastructure development from the government. And also, with China now, that referring back to the stimulus package that I did mention earlier, they are trying their best to reopen that economy. And with the size of that economy, eventually it'll reopen. So there is definitely potential there. And then the environment that we're also looking at, I mean, inflation has lowered, interest rates have also lowered for big corps and the consumer at large, there is opportunity for either people to build houses, purchase property, or businesses or multinationals to start investing back into property.
Sean, I need a rand call from you. We're at 17.18 at the moment. We've been struggling to sort of sit around this area, but we came down below 17.50 off the back of the rate cut and that stimulus package. Are we going to break 17 before the end of the year? Do you think it's possible?
It is possible, only in the short term, in my opinion, because I think, yes, the rand is performing well, fundamentally speaking. However, the dollar is also quite weak. So there is a mix there where the dollar is weak, which bodes well for the rand. And then with what's happening in our economy, also that's good for the rand. But once the dollar turns around or the dollar index, we need to keep a watchful eye on what happens to rand after the fact.
I suppose that comes back to the election conversation that if Donald Trump does return with his pro-American policies, that could potentially be a boost for the dollar, and that could mean 2025 could look very different to where we are now.
Exactly.
Very, very interesting times indeed. I think we'll have to keep an eye on that and keep an eye on how the markets shape up as we head closer to that US election. Sean, thank you as always for the time. Thank you for the insights. Great chatting to you. That's Sean Dendere, Manager for Trading Services at Attrive South Africa, joining me to reflect on the market movements throughout the day, as well as what could potentially be a driving sentiment there.
Welcome to the Hive Group, where innovation meets communication and technology fuels our creativity. We merge precision and brand communication through analytics, data, insights, and technology. Doing more, faster, from developing CRM systems and immersive online experience to automating content and social media marketing. The Hive Group. Communicate, elevate, innovate.
Unleash your workforce's potential with Regent Business School, proud BBBEE Level 1 provider. Elevate your team's capabilities through crafting a future-ready workforce with top-tier accredited qualifications. Immerse your company in a culture of ongoing learning, paving the way to success. And what sets us apart? Regent's custom business programs are tailored seamlessly to your company's requirements. Visit regent.ac.za. Regent Business School. Be the future.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Early this morning, Old Mutual gave us their half-year results for the 6 months ended June 2024. They gave us an update on how the first half of the year is going. And I'm joined on the line by the Chief Financial Officer at Old Mutual, Casper Trotsky, to take a look at the performance of the business and try and make sense of where the business is at the moment. Good evening, Casper. Lovely to speak to you as always. Your initial thoughts with where the year has started off in terms of the first 6 months?
Yes, thanks, Jimmy. Look, it's been very tough conditions out there. You know, we've seen, you know, that consumers have been under pressure, and we were hoping for, you know, interest rate cuts a little bit earlier in the year. But what we've seen recently is, you know, the interest rate cut. We've seen fuel prices come down. We've seen inflation drop a bit. So certainly prospects from here on outwards look good. Our operating profits for the year were down 3%. If you adjust for the, you know, the big investments that we're making in our growth initiatives, it was up 4%. So we're pleased with that, given the investment we're making in investing for growth through the cycle.
Casper, you mentioned obviously a tough environment to sit in, and that environment has changed quite considerably, at least in the last 30 days with the implementation of the two-pot system. How has that been for the business? What are the initial reactions? I mean, Old Mutual is one of the largest pension providers in South Africa, and obviously this new two-pot system would have impacted your clients' decision-making. What have you guys been seeing on that side?
Yes, so we decided to, you know, deal with two-pot almost fully digitally through you know, various channels on our website and WhatsApp. And I think that was a very good decision to make because it allows clients to deal with us almost seamlessly. So we've ourselves processed about 125,000 we've received 125,000 applications to the value of about 1.7 billion, and we're busy processing that now. We are monitoring that to see if the initial, you know, we think there's been an initial rush to get claims in. We're looking carefully to see if that continues. We were expecting this. We were expecting to see some outflows. And whilst there will be an impact in the short term, we believe that the additional preservation we now have on two-thirds of funds will see, you know, in the longer term, more people saving. So it's a good thing in the longer term.
Casper, speaking of things that are a good thing, the SENS announcement that came out today with the numbers also highlighted that the business is showing some signs of strength. I mean, gross written premiums up 9% to just under 14 billion rand there, but also the funds under management growing by 5% to just around 1.5 trillion. Clearly, those are signs that the business is still doing strong and there is still appetite for the products and the services that you offer.
Yes, and if you look in a little bit more detail into the result, we did see one or two areas where we had elevated claims, which sort of impacted the actual profitability. But the underlying trends we're comfortable with, so our you know, sales in our massive foundation cluster business were still very strong. And, you know, overall sales in our short-term business, as you highlighted, you know, up strongly. So we are seeing momentum in the business, and we think that that momentum will increase with the recent interest rate cuts, fuel price reductions and all that. So, yeah, so we on a forward-looking basis, we think that we should see an acceleration in new business sales volume. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Sticking with the forward-looking expectations, do we have an update on the banking side of it? I know the last time we looked at numbers and we looked at full-year results, we kind of had a conversation around, yes, the banking division is coming online. We expect it probably around 2024, 2025. Where do we stand on that? Is that still proceeding as planned?
Yes, we are slightly delaying our actual launch of the bank to the first quarter of next year. That's 2025, and that's from a technical perspective, we're on track, in fact, slightly ahead of where we want to be for, in terms of actually building the bank and doing the industry testing. And we just currently, you know, we're dealing with all the Section 17 conditions that we need to fulfill in order for us to launch the bank, and we expect to have that completed in the first quarter, and then we'll be, you know, scaling the bank on a phased basis during the course of next year to take it then to, you know, a full offering by the end of the year.
Casper, let's look at the rest of the prospects for the business. Obviously, with such a big operation, there's always areas of opportunity that are coming up and areas of expansion. Are there any plans, anything in the pipeline around acquisitions, around other regions, anything that we can look forward to?
Look, for the moment, we are focusing on our existing businesses. We still see lots of growth opportunity in most of our businesses. So that includes the Mass and Foundation business. In our personal finance and wealth business, we see opportunity in further distribution. In our short-term business, we've actually made quite a few acquisitions, and we're bedding those down, and we're seeing good growth coming out of that business. In a number of our businesses, we've expanded our credit capability so that we can have some additional profitability. And then obviously we have Next 176, which is looking at adjacent opportunities to insurance, so looking at new client bases, looking at platforms that we can sell services into, and then the bank, so that we've actually got a very big growth agenda on a forward-looking basis. You know, our Africa business has shown very strong top-line growth, and we've had a few initiatives like pivoting to corporate in Africa, where we've seen strong growth. So that's also been a source of growth, and we'll continue to focus on building out that growth in our, what we call our Africa regions.
That interim dividend that came through, Casper, 34 cents a share, certainly a good time to be increasing a dividend while the momentum is still on your side. Does this mean we can look forward to kind of a strong second half of the year and a stronger finish to the year?
Yeah, as I said, you know, if we see the interest rate cuts come through, if we see less pressure on consumers, we should see an acceleration of sales volumes in the second half. We also announced a 1 billion share buyback that our board has approved, and that's still subject to regulatory approval. So the cash generation of our business has been very strong, so very pleased with that.
Looks like it's going to be a bumper second half of the year, even though the first half of the year was already quite strong. We'll leave it at that. Casper, we'll catch up later on as these announcements continue to come out. Thank you so much for the time and for the insights. Casper Troski, Chief Financial Officer at Old Mutual, on their first half of the year's performance, as well as what the second half of the year could look like for them.
Unleash your workforce's potential with Regent Business School, proud BBBEE Level 1 provider. Elevate your team's capabilities through crafting a future-ready workforce with top-tier accredited qualifications. Immerse your company in a culture of ongoing learning, paving the way to success. And what sets us apart? Regent's custom business programs are tailored seamlessly to your company's requirements. Visit regent.ac.za. Regent Business School. Be the future.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by Regent Business School. Elevate your team's capabilities through corporate training. Visit regent.ac.za. We're taking a look at a Regent Business School. They've opened up their intake for the 2025 year. I'm joined on the line by Director for Student Services at Regent, Dr. Ridwan Asfat, to take a look at this and understand what's on offer. Good evening, Dr. Asfat. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about the custom business programs that are available for intake next year.
Yeah, lovely. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for the opportunity, and good evening to all your listeners as well. Well, we're quite excited. Just to give you a quick insight, and maybe to the listeners, I mean, Regent Business School, we've just celebrated our 25-year history, you know, being here as a South African organization and fully accredited with all the regulators and the like. So we're quite excited to announce that we've got quite a few new programs and we've got new offerings that are coming through in the year. But let me just start off by saying why would somebody want to study with Regent? I mean, there's quite a few offerings out there. So I think the one element, and I think you talk about it quite often in your program, Jimmy, is the whole issue of entrepreneurship and, you know, skilling for the next generation and skilling for the job market. So one of the big focuses for Regent is entrepreneurial skills, you know, getting people out there, making sure that they have the skills that they can make a difference in communities and society and to South Africa particularly. And how we envisage that is we have various programs that we offer, from finance to marketing to entrepreneurship to supply chain. So these programs are designed in such a way that they make a difference to the learner as well. And also it has a direct impact on the businesses that they kind of work in. So those are the kind of things that we focus on, particularly when it comes to workforce solutions, is how can we make a real impact? And we know the world of business, as you know, you talk about it every day, is really, you know, quite stringent, and it's, you know, it's fast moving. So we want to put out students or other learners who are qualified, who can make a difference in the world of work that they find themselves in, Jimmy.
Now, Dr. Asfat, when you say students, a lot of the people listening to the show might think that you're possibly talking about young students, but Regent has an actual offering that's tailored towards businesses as well. So a corporate institution can bring their staff members, their employees, to Regent to benefit from these programs. Tell us about that corporate offering that you have.
Yeah, so actually, it's very interesting. Maybe 95-97% of our students are adult learners like yourself and myself who are in full-time employment and, you know, wanting to progress up the corporate ladder or getting into some programs or the other and progress within the organization. So we cater for them specifically because, you know, this whole issue of remote learning and work and learning at a distance and not being full-time in a class. So we refer them to as students, but we call them adult learners because the way you and I will learn be very different to a student that walks in straight out of school. So in terms of the way we offer it is it's on a very flexible basis. Everything is online. Everything is available. We have a series of workshops of webinars that kind of makes it very flexible in terms of the way the learners. And I'll give you a practical example of how we do this. So, for example, we understand the world of work where there might be an assignment due or an exam or there might be some activity due. And due to some commitment, I mean, if you have your CEO or your CFO wanting a deadline on a program or a project, and you've got an assignment, I suppose you were first focus on your company priorities. So we offer that flexibility where you contact us and say, you know what, I'm really having a challenge here. Give me another few more days. And we are very open to that. So also, we customize the courses to the industry that they're looking for. So whether it's in retail, whether it's in finance, whether it's in supply chain, those programs are customized to sort or to look at solutions within that industry or that company specifically. And let me just tell you quickly, For example, we've got professional body accreditations with SAICA, for example, with our PGDA, you know, and we push out, we get those kind of graduates that go out there into the financial sector. We've got project management, and we're quite excited to announce that we're having a new program launched in 2025. It's a postgrad diploma in business intelligence. So we're quite excited about that program to make a difference. So all of these programs are designed particularly with the adult learner in mind, and to the listeners, I think predominantly who listen to your program, Jimmy.
It's quite interesting that a business that's had 25 years of operating experience in South Africa is able to still be at the forefront of these innovative solutions, especially for the working demographic. Dr. Asfat, I want to look at the BBBE status of Regent. You touched on that very briefly at the start of our chat, but obviously when we look at development and we look at the landscape of the country, I want to look at the benefit of having that as Regent and how that lends itself to your offering to companies.
No, that's fantastic, and it's a great question. I think that the critical part for us is that with this BBBE rating, we know that as a level one, we are definitely making an impact in the lives of the people that matter in this country. And we are very passionate about that. And what we're saying is to companies, seize that opportunity to partner with us. Because I think, you've probably had your guests talk about it, the tax benefits that accrue with the BBBE kind of level that we have. Also, there's an issue of enterprise development and supplier development within the BBBE framework that we look at. So we are quite very excited in terms of having that put out to the companies out there. Number one, there is a tax benefit. Number two, there's bonuses, there's ratings that they would get by using us. And that will also give them the opportunity to access other opportunities within the BBE kind of framework. So it's also a great opportunity for them to partner with an institution that has that level. I mean, it's not easy to get those level one statuses these days. So we are very, very, very proud of that kind of thing. And I think the critical part here is tapping into that enterprise development and supplier development, where it's uplifting those small businesses or those small suppliers that can get into the bigger chains or the bigger programs or the bigger companies, and we offer that opportunity. But I think for the companies, number one is definitely a tax benefit. Number two is getting in new young blood into it using this method in as well, and also making a difference within the society. Within the country that we have, and we know the challenges we have, you know, the triple challenges of poverty and the likes. So we know that by doing this, we are making a difference, and those companies that partner with us definitely will make a difference in the lives of South Africans as well as in the corporates or the companies that they are in.
As someone in the entrepreneurial space, I think it's quite important to be able to continuously be able to develop your skills, and we thank Regent for that. Most importantly, Dr. Asfat, before I let you go, we've spoken about these opportunities, we've spoken about how great they can be, but we haven't spoken about how our listeners can get in touch with Regent, how they can access them. Can we get details, websites, contact information, all of that, please?
No problem, lovely. I think just one quick note before we conclude. I think there's two elements that we do very, very well is what we've called the ID Lab, which focuses particularly on 21st century kind of skills, global workplace skills and employability. We have what we call the Entrepreneurship Hub, which is the Red Hub, which focuses totally on entrepreneurship. But we're excited to let your listeners know that we are open for the 2025 year ahead. We've got a graduation coming in the ICC on the 12th October. And you know, companies are going to be spending on their bursaries and the like, and wanting to do it. So you can find us on all our social media platforms. You can find us at www.regent.ac.za. You'll find us in all of those things. But we've got offices in Durban, Johannesburg, Cape Town, East London, Swaziland, Namibia, and even in Mauritius. And we open every Saturday for visits, or any time that students or rather any learners or any of your listeners want to come through, come and experience the ID Lab, come and experience firsthand what Regent's got to offer, and we'll be able to answer any of your questions. So look at www.region.ac.za, look at any of the social media, Instagram, Facebook, and the likes, and you'll find us there. And we're looking forward to meeting you and the listeners that SAFM has, and looking forward to take them into their careers further.
There you have it, folks. They're available everywhere. You can find them everywhere. Be sure to check them out. They are ready to help you into your 2025 journey. Thank you so much, Dr. Aswat. That was Dr. Ridwan Aswat, who's Director for Student Services at Regent Business School, letting us all know that they are open for business in 2025, and you can register with them now. This feature was brought to you by Regent Business School. Advance your team's capabilities through skills development training. Visit regent.ac.za.
Unleash your workforce's potential with Regent Business School, proud BBBEE Level 1 provider. Elevate your team's capabilities through crafting a future-ready workforce with top-tier accredited qualifications. Immerse your company in a culture of ongoing learning, paving the way to success. And what sets us apart? Regent's custom business programs are tailored seamlessly to your company's requirements. Visit regent.ac.za. Regent Business School. Be the future.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We got an announcement earlier today from HSBC. They announced that after 29 years in South Africa, they would be exiting South Africa, announcing that they would be selling off their South African businesses and operations to two different South African banks. I'm joined on the line by Kokkie Koeman, who's director at Denker Capital, to take a look at these developments and try and make sense of them. Good evening, Kokkie. Thanks so much for taking the time. Are you surprised by the move?
No, it has been telegraphed, and surprised that they splitting, well, I can talk about that, that they split some to First, some to Absa, but HSBC took a principal decision a few years ago to get out of what they call non-core units, businesses and countries. And it's all got to do with efficiency of capital, and this is also post-2008, where regulators put much higher capital levels on having investments in countries outside of your own. So you've got to make sure when you are in another country that it's profitable. And South Africa was just, for them, subscale, but also more important, you know, for them, if you're a number one, two or three player, then you can gain market share. But if you're too small, the cost of growing that is just too big. And so it's nothing against South Africa. And you could say at this stage, well, you know, with the GNU now and with South Africa growing, is it the right decision? But I think it's more just a case of they had made the decision and, it's just too small for them.
This decision comes alongside a couple of other decisions as well. They've exited a couple of other regions. They've looked at regions like Malta and revisited their operations in those areas. Is this consolidation of HSBC's operations something to be concerned about? I mean, I think back to what we saw with Credit Suisse, and we didn't expect them to find themselves in that predicament to have to be bought out by UBS. Is there something amiss with HSBC, or is this just strategic realignment?
No, I think it's amazing how long it takes to recover for a bank and an insurer from making poor capital allocation decisions. Well, in fact, retailers as well. Just think of Pick n Pay and Woolies going into Australia and the mess that created. So a lot of these moves all come, as I said, from 2008, where capital was free and plentiful, and guys were, banks with insurers were going into different countries and thought they can grow there. And it took quite a while for them to first come to the realization and then to start exiting. HSBC, very, very sound bank, excess capital. But true, post-2008 it wasn't. It was actually, and then it's been a very cheap investment because the returns on capital were so low. And the CEO has really been working on increasing that return on capital. And just, by the way, they even sold, I think, their Canadian operation as well. So it's not South Africa. It's just, they went through the list and said, where do we focus on? And remember, their two main markets are still the UK and Hong Kong. And so this bit of capital in South Africa, we can do better with that in Hong Kong.
Speaking of the South African business, what happens now to the South African clients, to the South African operations? I understand it's being split across First Rand or RMB to some extent and Absa.
Yeah, I suppose I would guess, and I haven't actually seen the news flow yet. I'm still in London at this stage, but I would guess that the investment banking part or what we call the sales side, the investment banking research side, selling investment products to investors, that will most probably go to RMB. because it fits in nicely with what they do. And I would say business they still have with higher net worth clients, that would go to APSA because it would fit in with what APSA is doing there. And normally those type of things are placed or shopped around, so to speak. And, you know, then I suppose all the banks would have had a look at it and decided, yeah, does this fit me? What is the price? Am I it's worth paying for it? But for the clients, essentially, it should be seamless, except obviously they don't necessarily have access to HSBC funding. And I'm actually not sure at this stage too early to see what normally happens in terms of if you've had a relationship and with certain fee structures, with certain costs, with certain interest rates. I doubt if that changes immediately, but over time that might change.
Mm. I see there is also an announcement here, or confirmation rather, that the part of the deal that relates to First Rand and the RMB side will also include the transfer of employees. So a good thing there. It doesn't look like we're going to be losing any jobs just yet on that part. Corky, while we are on this, we spoke to Old Mutual a little earlier around their results. They confirmed their intention to continue that pursuit into the banking world in 2025. And I just wanted to get your thoughts around the market at the moment. Is it kind of an open market for players like Old Mutual to be able to come in? Is it more conducive locally to local banks than it is to offshore banks? I mean, as you said, HSBC is probably looking at the cost of running an offshore operation here, and perhaps other banks might be wondering the same.
Yeah, now, there's a few questions in there. The first one is local versus offshore. And so local banks will definitely always have an advantage above offshore player coming in, because you just don't know the market, you don't get the right people. But local, at least you know the market, you can attract staff, you most probably have staff. When it comes to Old Mutual, look, they have advantages. The number one is obviously they have got a big client base. And so number one, the talk was always, I think for the last 15 years, they've been talking about and have had the attempts of setting up a bank. But the talk was always, you can cross-sell to the rest of your client base, your insurance client base. Historically, that was always difficult because all your client data was in different silos and it didn't talk to each other. But these days, you know, data is much better organized and it's much better, easier to cross-sell. But secondly, also, just you get an immediate source of deposits from clients who have pension fund or life policy payouts, and you can immediately send them an offer to say place this on deposit with us at Old Mutual Bank. But competitive landscape in South African banking is very, very competitive. So, yeah, I wish them well. It's very difficult with all the regulatory overlays, the technology that is required. I just had a meeting with Bank of Ireland yesterday, who actually closing the UK lower end income business, yeah, because they can't make it profitable. So to start a bank in any country, there's a lot of capital that needs to go in. You need to attract the best people, or very good people, experienced people initially. And also it's look how long it took Discovery. Good, they started from scratch, but they also had a client base within the group. So I'm not sure how long it will take Old Mutual, but they're not going to be profitable, I would say, for the first 3 or 4 years.
Corky, when we look at the target base, you mentioned that Old Mutual obviously has the ability to leverage off of their existing base, and we look at the likes of Capitec that came through and picked a very clear market segment to go after. Is there a market segment that you think is underserved at the moment that might present an opportunity for anyone out there that's thinking this is underserved?
Yeah, the one nice thing about this conference is speak to about 40 banks all over the world, and one of the meetings we had as well with Brazilian banks. And Brazil is a lot like South Africa, with a very high Gini coefficient, very large group of unemployed or poorer people. And that's generally where the gap is, a gap, so to see, because those people do need access to lending products, especially if they want to just start being a street trader or something. So that's often where the biggest opportunity is. But I see Old Mutual regularly makes reference to Capitec. Don't forget that when Capitec started, the market was different. You had APSA and even Standard Bank at that stage who were neglecting that lower end of the market. So Capitec walked in and actually took market share by being very innovative. I don't know if you recall, they changed the banking hours, they changed a lot of things. They just went identified what the other banks were doing wrong and focused on that and gave that client level a very good service. For Mutual to do the same now, it is very difficult to now be innovative. It's all possible, but you've actually got to differentiate yourself by being even better service, but it's still at that lower end of the market. That's why I think they'll go mostly for the easy captive market. Well, firstly would be their staff, and secondly would be your clients. But all those clients most probably have existing banking relations, so it's going to be difficult to get them to come across to Old Mutual Bank if they haven't got a very competitive and professional offering.
Well, we'll certainly see how that plays out and how the landscape looks going forward. It's certainly a good time to be in operations in business in South Africa, but we'll leave it at that. Corky, thanks as always for the time and for the insights. Corky Kooyman, who is director at Denker Capital on the HSBC exit from South Africa and also the South African banking landscape.
And in your business news, Reserve Bank Governor, what's his name, has repeatedly said this and that, and policymakers are expecting rates to go up or down. With inflation somewhere between 0 and 100%, interest rate relief may come sooner or later. Who knows, really? The whatchamacallit slid into undefined territory based on the Duhigi being so-so, and the markets were hard to describe. Despite initial doubts, the outcome was a mixed bag. The rand was meh based on the US consumer prices, but sentiment towards the currency could be, you know, whatever.
You can't base a decision on imprecision. Ask your financial advisor about a guaranteed annuity from Momentum Wealth. Personalized certainty.
It's Thursday, it's SME of the Week time, and this week we're taking a look at a company called NTT Empire, a business in the biofertilizer space. I'm joined on the line by the company's founder and CEO, Noah Lelaka, to take a look at the business. Noah, good evening. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about NTT Empire. What do you guys do?
Hi, good evening. Thank you very much for having us on the show. We collect waste, residential waste, agricultural waste, and your restaurant waste. And then we turn it into two products, namely biogas, which is a renewable energy, and biofertilizer, which is an agricultural supplement.
How do you do this? Do you have any specialized equipment that you guys could use to convert it? How does the whole process work?
Yeah. Are we using an anaerobic digester? So the process is called anaerobic digestion, where we process everything in the absence of oxygen and any other air. So, yeah.
What inspired you to start this business? What made you think, I'm going to go around collecting the waste of other businesses and do something with that?
It was when we solved our own problem. And then I realized that the market needs this kind of solution for this certain problem. And then that's where we ventured into it. And then while we were in the process, we figured we are actually addressing climate change as well. So, yeah,
So when you kind of came up with the solutions and you looked at the business, I'm sure you would have tested a couple of things beforehand and just gone through some interesting processes. How did you arrive at the fact that this is where you want to end up in terms of the bio products that you produce, and why limited to only two at this stage?
Okay, well, it's not limited to two at this stage. It's just that the two we are perfecting. We are adding the biodiesel as we speak. So we are going through the trial and error process. But what inspired us to actually be sure that we have the business and actually go this direction? It was because, you know, for me, it was an ever-changing environment. So I learned that every turn, at every trial and error, there was something to learn. And as I go forth and forth, I've realized that this industry is actually big on a global scale. That's why we are 3 years now. Yesterday, we were turning 3 years since the registration of the company. So yeah, that's why we are still going ahead, because we haven't yet explored this sector to its full potential according to the global scale.
Now, you pitched this idea initially as part of a pitch to Anglo-American's development arm. Take me through that. Take me through that journey, what you learned from that, what invaluable insights you got from that experience.
Okay, so as the idea started way back in 2017, I've been trying to get attention from your funders and your financial service providers, but I couldn't even get to it because of the idea was just too much. Thinking of the dangerous goods and everything, I always got caught off. Until just the day when I got a call from a friend telling me about Anglo Zimele. So I felt strongly about it because I knew Zimele back then. So I just went there, and yeah, I think I got what I needed, because Anglo Zimele was just designed for such businesses which solve problems on a long run. And I think that's where I was able to develop this thing even further and apply the financial aspects of it to the idea and the business aspects of it, which I had no idea where to start. So the whole process, the whole training, it has your testing the market. When you set your price, you don't just set your price. You have to have factors that make you arrive to that price, such things. So it made me very, very, very competitive in this sector because I was studying the competition while I was doing the right thing on my side, like your compliances and everything else, which tends to kill a lot of businesses. So I can safely say that Anglo Zimele is just an initiative that needs to carry on and on and on to discover such businesses like myself.
Yes. Businesses like yourselves are so important to the economy. I mean, SMEs are the backbone of a lot of what happens in the economy. I want to get a sense of what the business looks like now. How many teams have you got in place? What are you thinking around growing the business? I know you touched on that biodiesel expansion into that. What does the business look like now, and what do you kind of need to take it to that next level?
Okay, well, the business now is very healthy. It is very healthy because we have our own database of farmers, so meaning that we have our own database of customers. And by in turn, we actually get support to them. So we are playing a very important role in our communities back here because of this business. And me and my team, we actually developed this relationship. It's like we are a family. As we speak, we are trying to script write and shoot a series where we actually explain what a biofertilizer is, because we realize that not a lot of people understand what a biofertilizer is. And then we have been pitching a lot about regenerative farming, and not a lot of people are familiar with that, like your nil-till farming. People, when they farm, they still use the old method of tillage, and we are actually promoting regenerative farming and nil-till because we realized as we go along that all life depend on 6 inches of the topsoil. And biofertilizers really fix that topsoil and balance the ecosystem of the soil. So, yeah, I can safely say that we are growing. Three years later, we are way farther than we were 3 years back. And then just last year, we were not even having all this, you know, capacity, but now we do. So every year we have taken a step forth. And every year we are making an impact and we are growing into that direction. And I can safely say when we don't have business, we have a hobby because we all enjoy what we are doing at Entity Empire.
Now, tell me about that biofertilizer. Tell our audience about what it is that that biofertilizer does for the crop. I imagine we've got some of our listeners who are farmers and that might be interested in your product. Tell us about it and all of that information.
Okay, so a biofertilizer is a stage 3 type of fertilizer. You know, your stage 1 is your normal organic old and compost fertilizer. And then your stage 2 is all your synthetic and your chemicals and all that fertilizers. So a stage 3 is more like a microbial blend because it acts as a soil amendment while giving you all the NPK requirement, you know, your micronutrients and macronutrients. And also it is a pest control because our biofertilizer contains your rabbit urine, contains your neem oil and your marigold. So you get the benefits of using all three in one. And remember, when you're using your biofertilizer, because all those microbes, they create life when you pour them onto the soil. Now, by default, it becomes a very great soil amendment. And in the long run, it's called sustainable farming. Like your farming will just be sustainable and you'll never lose any of your topsoil. And that is sustainable and regenerative farming. So biofertilizer, it has so many factors. It has so many factors. And I think it's a solution that we need, especially at this point in time, because a lot of food on our shelves is non-organic. It's mostly GMO. And you know that you get 9 times more nutrition in an organic tomato than a GMO tomato. So by growing, by using this biofertilizer, we're actually decreasing all the bills of pesticides and herbicides and your hospital bills as well. So it is very beneficial in the long run.
It's always beneficial to have good fertilizer, but it's also beneficial to have someone who knows what they're talking about. Now, most importantly, how do people get hold of your business? How do people reach out to you and engage with you, place orders? How do people get in touch?
Yes, for any national supply, if you are in South Africa and you need our product, we can get to you via courier. You can get to us on our social media pages. It is NTT Empire Consortium. And you can also call us directly to our office as 079-839-2121. We'd be happy to courier to you via courier guy anywhere in the country.
What a unique innovation and what a unique way to tackle waste in South Africa. We'll leave it at that. Thanks so much, Noah, for the time and for the insights. We wish your business the very best of luck. We look forward to seeing you expand and grow and continue to do the good work that you do. That was Noah Lelaka, who is the founder and CEO of NTT Empire, a biodiversity business that operates within South Africa. It's just gone 7 o'clock. Greg Coast is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. From my side, good night.